This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
This is Soundworks, the magazine for railway enthusiasts around the world, coming to you from Bowness in Scotland.
Hello, and welcome to this, the 10th edition of Sound Blast, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society's download, the totally non-visual magazine. I'm Sandy Simpson, and I'm right here in Bowness in central Scotland with the indefatigable David, by the way, the editor, producer, and roving reporter for Sound Blast. And a special welcome to this extra special steam-filled edition, 30 minutes of pure nostalgia to mark 50 years of the SRPS. When the infant Bowness and Kinneil Railway reached Bowness Library, only a couple of hundred hard-earned yards, there was a special celebration. The Society organised a festival of transport, and Radio 4 produced a special programme, during which the keeper of the past, Eamon Hind, climbed aboard a small locomotive, Clydesmill No. 3, with Stuart Summers and the late Alistair Kirkcaldy. But things didn't quite go as planned.
What's happened this year? We've drawn to a horse.
The vacuum again.
The vacuum is dropping. You see, you must have 21 inches of vacuum in the train pipe. At the moment, we must have a leak somewhere in the train pipe. And we're losing vacuum. And as a result, the brakes come on.
So the brakes are vacuum brakes. And the vacuum is powered by the steam engine.
That is correct. The vacuum is created by a thing called an ejector. And the ejector's working okay, but we must have a leak in the train pipe. It's drawing air, destroying the vacuum, and the brakes come on, and we can't get rid of it. And as long as we can't create vacuum, we can't move.
As a safety measure?
It's a safety measure. If the train brakes or divides, then of course the vacuum destroys, the brakes come on automatically.
There are no steering wheels in steam engines.
There are no
and you have no gear.
Well, we have a reversing gear here, but it's forward for forward, obviously. Gear, out of gear, and back for back. And you can notch it up one notch at a time to conserve the steam. In other words, that affects the valve setting of the valve on the actual cylinder. And you can conserve steam by notching it up as you get underway. If you want more power, you put it further forward or further back to give you more power.
And that gear works on what principle? Just emitting steam?
Emitting steam to the cylinder. Further forward and further back it is, the steam is emitted to the piston live for a longer part of the stroke.
I see. Now, this regulator is basically what?
That is the throttle. This emits steam to the cylinder via the valve, which is controlled by the reversing gear.
She's very simple really though, isn't she?
It's a very simple principle, but there's a lot of things to watch. A steam engine only gives you out what you put into it.
Yeah.
The more you put in, obviously, the more you'll get out. And unless you watch it closely, you can lose the fire, the fire will just burn away to nothing at all. You'll lose pressure, you get a vacuum leak, you won't get your brakes on all the time. There's a lot of things can go wrong, but basically it's a very simple machine.
But it needs the one coach, I'm trying to the EC
power. Uh-huh.
Doing the best now to find the fault.
We're just checking the vacuum brakes now. Looks like we still have a leak. There are two ejectors to create vacuum. A big ejector, which is used for taking the brakes off rapidly. And the small ejector keeps the brakes off while the train is running.
Was that the system invented by Westinghouse?
Westinghouse did make vacuum brakes, but they were more renowned for air brake systems, which is the opposite principle. It's air pressure as against atmospheric pressure, which is the force on vacuum brakes, you see. It's the opposite principle, but has the same effect.
That signals to the guard, does it?
That's
buzzer just now. That lets them know you're ready to run, does it?
actually,
what's this function now, Stuart?
As the guardsman, he used to protect the rear of the train, you see.
How does he do that?
He looks out the other end. He has a brake valve also on his end. And on this railway at the moment, we have to propel just the train back forward, since there's no way of coming an engine with this course. So we have to propel up to the end of the line, and the guard indicates when we reach the end of the line. And then he, if we overstep the mat, he'll put on the brakes. So
it's breaking without bells now. Uh-huh. Operating without bells. So, just have to do it handy. Where are we going? Are we going back into the
seat? Oh, well, okay.
We'll have to get some coal for a plane of shit. We've just about had it.
At that point, the guard came up and asked us for our tickets. We looked blank. And, well, we were homeward bound, on foot.
Well, we're walking back down the track towards the station, which we left a few moments ago, because one of the hazards of steam railways is, of course, that things can go wrong. And indeed, our engine has failed to generate enough pressure to release the brakes and the vacuum system. And so Keith and I have just decided to walk back while the Railway Preservation Society members sort out the trouble.
Well, that recording was a long time ago.
It was, actually, quite a long time ago. Can hardly remember much of it.
It was a historic day,
wasn't
it?
It was a historic day, that's right. It was a good day, yeah, it was a good day. We just started from here. We just went along to Rose Crossing, and it was just a wee shuttle service. Compared to what it is today, we've got a long run up to Manual. A good 5 miles back and forward, so it's quite a good run. Eh?
You've got a different engine today.
We've got a different engine today. It's on hire from the Strathspey Railway.
And it is?
It's Baron...
Breirioch.
Breirioch. I'm not very good at pronouncing it.
Named after the mountain.
We're actually just putting water in it just now. We're on our lunch break, in inverted commas.
Doing it, so. He's going to open it up, are you?
Open it up, the water now.
How many gallons does she take?
Many gallons does it take? Well, he's a fireman, he'll know, but...
There's something like 6,000 litres, I think. What's that?
6,000 litres, then.
A lot of water.
A lot of water,
gallons or so, probably.
And we've got to usually fill up after each turn, because we've got steam heating on as well, and we're using a lot of steam going up and down, and keeping the carriages warm for the punters and the passengers, I should say. So
it's... Breirioch's like a similar engine that we've got here, isn't it?
Yes, we've got Weems tank number 20. It's the same manufacturer. It's actually the same. It's quite a good tank.
Barclay,
that's right.
What's it like to drive?
It's quite good to drive, that's right. The brakes are quite fierce on it, but it's quite good to drive. This is the first shot I've had of this one, so I'm just getting used to it, actually.
But there was a problem with this engine earlier on, wasn't there?
That's correct. One of the main steam pipes fractured in top of the cylinder casting. It actually broke away. The flange broke away. And we couldn't stop the steam getting back to the cylinder. So that was a major failure. So they had to actually cut a bit out of the smoke box and remove a section, and then put another section in and screw it down, and then insert it into the tapped out the top of the casting and fitted the screwed this in. Okay. And that's how they repaired it.
Is that you finished with the water?
That's how you finished with the water now. That's correct.
Am I going to get soaked standing here?
No. The fireman should hold the bag in for a couple of minutes so it empties and then drop it.
I'm just standing aside. Side,
that's it.
That's
right. And then dropping it down. That's it. Just a wee bit of water. You hear? That's it. Watering completed, and then we'll go round and on it in front of the train.
We're back on the footway now and ready to go. I've just put the steam brake on to hold the locomotive and release the handbrake, so I've just done that. Put the gear, which is the gear into forward so we can move forward. Release the steam brake, which I'm doing just now. Put on the whistle before we move. Open the regulator. Make sure everyone's clear ahead. Just shut the raincocks, just running along the run round loop towards the signal box. And the signal box, the signal's off, the top dolly signal's off, we're going back out onto the main line so we can pop all back to the actual train. The fireman's putting some coal on, as you can hear in the background. Blow the whistle. We approach the signal box. Now the train shed approaching the signal box and the runaround loop. Passing under the footbridge for the public like to watch the train underneath. I blow the whistle for them. Now moving out onto the main line. Moving out over the crossover onto the main line. Shut the regulator, apply the brake. We're past the signals that control the entry to the station. Stop beyond the signal. Need to wait on the signal from the signalman so we can go back onto the train. Change the direction with a reversing gear. And reverse gear. Two on the whistle. Release the brake. Open regulator. And we're off again. Come back slowly onto the train to couple up for the server.
That same weekend, no fewer than 8 chairmen of the Society lined up on the platform to look back on the achievements of the Society during their respective periods in office. Among those standing on the platform was John Hume, who was the Society's second chairman. And David Byerby asked him in November 2011 to give a progress report on the SRPS.
When I left the Society's chairmanship, we had the glimmerings of a railway. We had a good collection of locomotives and rolling stock. We had rail tours operating very successfully. We had a big public constituency and a growing public constituency. And I think all of these have been built on to a quite remarkable degree. I think what has pleased me particularly, because that was my main interest, was the way that the Scottish Railway Museum has developed. And I think that's something that will go on into the future and hopefully expand and deliver more to the public. But the way that the operating railway has developed has been fantastic. And the fact that you can have visiting locomotives via the connection to the Edinburgh and Glasgow is another great thing.
How important is this, though? How important is the Society in, if you look at it from Scottish, preserving Scottish history? Now, we know that they're a preservation society, but the accusation is it's grown men playing with trains, isn't it? So how important is it from a museum point of view, from a national point of view?
I think it's phenomenally important. I think railways were one of the great transforming influences in Scotland. I mean, if you think of taking away railways as a motivating force, then the Highlands would have remained an isolated area to a very considerable extent, the borders too. Railways tied the country together, allowed its mineral resources to be exploited. It made Scotland a great nation in world terms, not just a great nation for the Scots. It was a great nation for everybody, which it still is.
Looking back, what do you think is the biggest achievement of the SRPS?
To keep its soul.
Go on.
I think when I was with the Society as chairman, it was a very friendly society. It was a society that meant a lot to the people who were involved in volunteering in it. It meant a lot to Falkirk, because Falkirk was the base when I was there and was tied in with Falkirk as a place. And although the people of Bowness didn't welcome it quite as warmly at first as I would like to have seen, over the years it's become part of Bowness. It's part of people's perception of Bowness. And it's kept its humanity in the sense that the people who get involved in it, it's there, part of their life. And it's part of the life of the whole of Central Scotland now. And people think of the SRPS as being an integral part of what they see as being Central Scotland. And we couldn't wish for more than that.
But what are the challenges that it faces in the future?
The big challenges are, first of all, to continue to engage young people. Because as the pioneers are getting quite mature, so we need young people to come in and to pick up the baton. And I think we've got to face the fact that that is a very, very, very real challenge in an age of where young people seem to be more interested in operating electronically than they do with real things. But there's always a real appeal with dealing with physical objects, and this is shown by the popularity of the new museum at Riverside, and it's shown in the popularity of the new revived Museum of Scotland, National Museums of Scotland. And I think that will go on being valuable. And the fact that the society can offer people the opportunity to actually to get their own hands involved, to get their own dirt, I think that's going to go on being attractive. But it's a challenge. The other challenge, of course, is the challenge of funding. Society's been very, very effective in raising money and raising help in kind now. I hope that will go on into the future, but it's going to continue to be a challenge.
And in 20 years' time, where do you think the society will be?
Well, I hope it will be in Bowness. I think the museum concept will grow. I think that over the 20-year period, I would expect Scottish government, successive Scottish governments, to realise just how important this is and to be prepared to put central government funding into that component of the society's work. And I would hope that would not impinge on the things where volunteers are absolutely critical, the railway operation and the rail tours operation and so on. But it would give the society a platform on which it could build. And I could see the possibility over a 20-year period of developing satellite places where society material could be displayed, or even where satellite operations could take place. There might even be a coming together in an organisational sense of the other operating railways, all the operating railways in Scotland as a consortium, in a way which hasn't materialised to date.
So you look ahead and think it's very exciting?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. I think the society has achieved so much more than I ever hoped would be possible. And I think it's done it, as I said, without losing its soul. It's still recognisably the society that I knew, but it's much, much better, and it's got enormous potential for the future.
As you heard there, John Hume was the society's second chairman, undertaking that role between 1966 and 1975. And despite the passage of many years, John has never lost his passion for the society and interrupted his homeward train journey from Edinburgh to Glasgow to speak with David on the platform at Falkirk High. Their expectation was that the interview would have been recorded comfortably before the next train to Glasgow, which it was, but only by the skin of their teeth. Now, a special steam gala was held to mark the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Scottish Railway Preservation Society. Chris Lothian was the organiser, and the ever-willing David, by the way, caught up with Chris to learn more about this event.
This weekend we've been celebrating the 50th anniversary gala, and we've had an intense timetable, passenger, freight, steam, diesel, both days. It's let us have a chance to run some of the rarer stock. We've had the DMU out, the two Caledonian coaches, and we've even had the three LNR Teaks on display.
So how much organisation is required to get something like this off the ground?
A lot of months planning to get it in the timetable, to be able to organise with different departments so we can use different items of rolling stock, and then obviously the publicising it, getting it in some of the railway magazines. So it's taken a few months.
What's your favourite rolling stock that's out here today?
Today, definitely the DMU. It's hardly ever used, and it's such a nice vehicle to see running.
Apart from that, what's your best steam one?
This weekend's let us use the Preston Grange number 6, which is the first time it's ran here in operation. So it's quite good to see it working, doing station pilot duties.
Okay, let's take a walk down and have a look at number 6.
Have you go, David.
Okay. Right, it's quite neat with a hook plate here.
Yeah.
Can you describe it to me, please?
It's very small and compact and very basic.
There's no vacuum brake gear or steam heating gauges. You've got your big pressure gauge and then your regulator and reverser and brake, and that's it.
When it was working, what sort of jobs would it do?
Shunting coal wagons for the coal board, mainly.
So it was mainly in the pit, like the pit.
This engine works at Kinneil Coyery, originally. So it's quite unique that we've got it on our line where it works.
Not too far from home,
not too far from home.
Okay. Right, let's go and do something.
Just talk me through it. See what you're doing.
Just about to put it in full reverse.
Take the steam brake off. And we'll move on open the regulator. We're just about to come off shed and go back up to the pit, where we'll take more coal and water. Anyway.
And finally, David Bytheway has been to visit Mike Jodlick's archive of recordings of steam locomotives at work. So let's wallow in nostalgia for a few minutes.
Welcome to another dip into my steam railway sound archive. And this is a special one to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the Society. In fact, all the recordings you will hear were made when the Society was getting off the ground and there was lots of steam about. Firstly, we hear BR Caprotti Standard Class 5460 number 73149. It brings the Down Carlisle to Perth parcels into Stirling at 9:26 on the 24th September 1966. After a 20-minute stop to load and unload parcels, the Caprotti makes a cracking departure under the overbridge and away northwards. At 11:44 p.m. on the same evening, Britannia Class 462 number 70033 Charles Dickens comes to a halt in Stirling Station with the late evening three-coach passenger from Carlisle. 4 minutes later, there's a chorus of whistles as the Britannia leaves for Perth. BR Scottish Region had organised the last V2 excursion from Edinburgh to Aberdeen on the 5th of November 1966. In this onboard recording, we hear Class V2 262 number 60836 whistling in the gathering dusk as it passes Montrose. The three beats of the three-cylinder engine's exhaust sharpen as it starts out on a single-track girder viaduct. The climb steepens to 1.88 over a high embankment and a brick arch viaduct. Then it roars into a rock cutting to reach double track again at Ousen signal box. Well, that's all for now. See you next time.
Ah, yes, those recordings bring memories. Thank you, Mike Yodeluk, and thank you, David, by the way. And that pretty well wraps up this edition of Sound Blast. In the next edition, we'll be behind the scenes when Hollywood comes to Bowness, and for the Diesel Gala. Meantime, you can contact us online at www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. All lowercase, that's www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. Or you can write to us at soundblast, two words this time with initial capitals, soundblast, SRPS, Union Street, Bowness, West Lothian, EH519AQ, Scotland. The tireless roving reporter, editor and producer has been David Bytheway, and I'm Sandy Simpson, wishing you all that you wish yourself from everyone here at the Scottish Railway Preservation Society at Bowness in Scotland.